Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Caretaker Point of View episodes. We have another couple that I'm really excited to gather another lived experience, a nuanced story with Shay and Clancy on navigating Nutcracker Syndrome, both as the patient, but now Clancy. Welcome as a caretaker that takes such a kind of backseat, if you will. And I'm hoping to kind of center you in today's dialogue to help other caretakers and also to help patients understand how maybe they can have communication with their caretakers to know how to, I mean, not to say, hey, patients, here's another thing you need to do, but it is good just to say, hey, there's two people tangoing, sometimes multiples. So, Shay and Clancy, welcome. I'm excited for you to be here. Thank you for being here and sharing
Thank
your
you for
story.
having us. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, to start, as with most of these episodes, I just want to position your story, Shay. And what you're sharing with me is yours is, I'm really excited. You are a classic Nutcracker patient. And so tell us a little bit more about that. Tell us about your journey, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, so I have the rarer of the Nutcracker syndromes. I have posterior Nutcracker syndrome. So for those who may not know, that's where their left renal vein, it's compressed between the aorta and the spine. It's very sometimes not picked up, and you can live your whole life without knowing you have it. And it's a random occurrence that kind of happens in utero when you're being developed. So it's not something that develops over time, like anterior Nutcracker syndrome. And so my experience has been lifelong. Some of my earliest memories, I guess I was 5, I was hospitalized with some random unknown kidney infection that like never grew anything. I was like having blood in my urine, and I was urinating frequently, and just nobody could really figure out what it was. And my mom at the time doesn't have a great recall on like we saw a nephrologist, but like, did they diagnose anything? I don't know. And back then, like medical records, that was so long ago. And then like over time, things kind of evolved. I had children, I had 4 pregnancies, and so like those things kind of evolved. I have my own thoughts on whether or not I truly had preeclampsia or whether I truly had, pregnancy-induced hypertension. Those things I won't ever know, but I have like just very curious thoughts on it. After my pregnancies, it's kind of when my life started to change a bit more. I started having really heavy, painful periods. Symptoms kind of didn't make sense. I saw a bunch of different specialists. We ended up doing a hysterectomy. Like you, Simone, it was like one of those things. Oh, did I actually need a hysterectomy? Again, something I can't double back on and put it back. What's done is done. I did have an improvement in my quality of life for a short while. But again, right, then new symptoms kind of started. And so I ended up a few years after that having an abdominoplasty, or for layman's terms, I guess, a tummy tuck. And it wasn't something that I felt like I needed or like aesthetically like thought I needed. I was getting it because I was having like this chronic back pain, and I was going to physical therapy, I was going to the chiropractor, and everyone just kept telling me the same thing, like your core is weak. And I'm like, well, I've had 4 babies, like let's correct this diastasis recti, put the muscle back, and then I can make it stronger. And again, I had like a relief of symptoms for a short while. I thought, okay, like this is it. I've found the issue. And then my symptoms really started snowballing after that. And I don't know if it was the restriction in the abdomen and not allowing it to expand and do the things, that kind of didn't have as much space. But shortly after that, I started going to physical therapy for like pelvic floor therapy. I was having like urinary incontinence with intimacy, and I was having like intense, low pelvic like pressure and bloating. And when I was intimate, I would have like this like swelling that was just like so random. And I'm just like, what is wrong with me? And my doctor, I'm so grateful that at the time I worked with the doctor that I was seeing. And so, we would kind of like shoot ideas off the hip. And one day she just randomly was like, hey, have you ever heard of pelvic congestion syndrome? And I was like, no. And she's like, well, look it up. And so I did. And I was like, well, okay, I'll get back to this because I'm going to go volunteer at camp this summer and, like, you know, whatever. So when I was at camp that particular summer, I accidentally opened up a medical record of mine from 2018, which was like 5 years prior. And I stumbled upon a CT scan that mentioned this incidental finding of this left retroaortic renal vein. And I was like, well, what the heck is that? So I searched it. And one of the complications of that is pelvic congestion syndrome. So that kind of led me down this like rabbit hole. I saw my first vascular surgeon in November of that year. So this is actually 2024 that I saw this vascular surgeon. And he was very kind, heard me, like listened to me so, so well. And like, I was so appreciative of him. Something just still didn't feel right. And that December, I donated blood. I got COVID like a week later. And then all of a sudden I was having like swelling in my arms and swelling in my legs. And I was just like, what on earth? And I followed up with him again. And he was just kind of like, well, you know, I can see the anatomy on there, but nothing looks occluded. And as many of us know in the Nutcracker community, that doesn't really mean anything. And so I just, at that point, I had already been part of this support group on Facebook, and I've learned so much in that group. And I was just like, is there like somebody who specializes in this above you? Like, and he was very kind and agreed to do a referral out, which I'm glad, because he was willing to do a venogram and he was willing to place a stent. And I was just like, everything I read says not to do a stent with posterior nutcracker syndrome. So I was very like, oh my gosh, like, no, thank you, but no. So then I got connected with UW Health in Madison. And so right now we're at like January of 2025. I spoke with the infamous Marcy at UW Health in February. And by March, she was inviting me down to come have a workup. So May of 2025, I went down, had a workup. Unfortunately, again, right, like my pressure gradients weren't right. They were like showing me the anatomy and like telling me like where it was like sluggishly going back into my inferior vena cava. And it was just kind of like, looks like a cat, sounds like a cat. We're not sure it's a cat. So I actually had to come back down a couple weeks later for a renal hilar block, which was positive. And so thankfully I got a phone call like a week later from Marcy, and I was very fortunate to be able to schedule surgery for July 17th of this year. So, I mean, right. That is amazing.
Congrats.
Yes. So now I'm about 5.5 months post-op. From my auto transplant. So I did also kind of panic, and they were going to do a hybrid. And I was just like, but what if I have May Thurner's and nobody knows? And so she agreed. I had Dr. Phillip, and she agreed to put it in my right lower pelvis. No questions asked. It was phenomenal. And then, yeah, during surgery, even though none of my imaging showed it, I ended up having a ton of collaterals. I had a dilated gonadal vein, so all of those were ligated, and I'm still kind of like, I can still feel some pressure in my lower pelvic occasionally, and I still have like some not pain, but like pressure in my legs. So I know like those veins are still shrinking back down. But yeah, it's been an interesting ride, and I don't know if that was quite brief, but I felt like I had to add all of that context.
For sure. No.
Especially in the context of posterior.
And I think that still is brief though. I mean, considering the medical journeys we've been on, One of the thing, I mean, for those that are listening to this episode, I'm like, whatever I knew you were coming up on, and then it wasn't in the imaging. I was like, you're about to say you had a bunch of collaterals, which I did too. And I was like, and if it wasn't for this one measly small little collateral that was captured in my venogram that I actually didn't know was there until UW Health showed it to me in my initial consult. I joke, I'm like, it was that one measly collateral that I think pushed them to be like, yeah, we'll take you as a client. And it's frustrating because it's like so many people that will get rejected at UW Health or UC Health, and I don't blame the surgeons to some extent, but it's even more why there's more research that's needed, because I was a different person. I mean, it was like a plug and play. Even though I was on a lot of Dilaudid when I was inpatient, I could immediately tell a difference. How are you doing since you're 5.5 months out, since you're out of transplant?
Almost right away, like right, my flank pain was gone almost, right, I woke up and it was just a different pain. I feel a lot better. I'm a completely different person. I don't have that swelling and pain, I guess, especially down into the left groin area, like when I am intimate or when I am being like physically active. And so all of those things have resolved. I was having like intense gas pains, and like I could see my abdomen like getting bloated and distending. And I was like eating Gas-X, like Tic Tacs, and I have not had to utilize that at all since I had surgery. And I, they discharged me with oxycodone, and I had a surplus of pain medication post-operatively, and it was great to be able to get off of that quickly. And no, my quality of life. While I still am working through some things, my quality of life has improved tenfold.
Absolutely. And I will say, I mean, as you know, on the Facebook group, it's very much there's a subset of people, and I know why they, I validate them arguing for this, is the top-down approach, like fix Nutcracker first and it could. I did the opposite. I got my stent for May Thurner and then did Nutcracker. And I just posted actually on a comment saying, I'm noticing people that have done Nutcracker first, a couple of my friends, prior to MTS, that their MTS almost got a smidge worse, or it didn't, like that lower, the low back pain, pelvic pain, left leg was still there. So I feel like there's an invert, there's like a bidirectional relationship, almost as if you have both, it doesn't really matter which one you fix, there's still going to be some residual. So it'd be interesting for you to look into May Thurner. And what I love about your story is that you advocated for yourself to say, but what it, I mean, if you have one vascular compression, there's a high likelihood that you have multiple, and I don't want to screw myself up down the road, which is why these stories are so important, so other people in this space can make the best decisions for them to set themselves up for success. Before we get into Clancy, I'm obviously want to. There's two things that are really interesting about your story, but I do want to ask the question, do you have other comorbidities as well? Because we know with vascular compressions, they usually are present with other things.
So I did have a connective tissue workup, which came back negative. I do think, though, that hypermobility, EDS is likely a possibility. Obviously, that doesn't have a genetic marker at, yet, so it's not super diagnostic. And I've not gone through the process of like seeing a provider to get a diagnosis. And right, the other things are purely, I have decided that is likely an issue, but I've not had worked up. Like, I do think I have thoracic outlet syndrome. I obviously had the pelvic congestion syndrome, but I was getting like worked up for lymphedema, and part of me was like, I don't want to be like, oh, I don't want this diagnosis, but I think this is wrong. And I'm glad that I stuck to that because it has improved drastically. So yeah, as far as like other diagnoses other than that, like no, I've been relatively healthy outside of like being chronically ill, like right, like the back pain and the pains that I've had with the nutcracker. I've been healthy
So,
otherwise.
So no endometriosis, autoimmune, or anything like that.
No, and right, like I did get evaluated for endometriosis, and that's also a tricky one because it can flare and go away. And so one of the providers, OBGYNs I was working with after my last pregnancy was trying to find out if I had that, and like I had colonoscopies, and you know, I ended up having a biopsy done before my hysterectomy, and everything kind of came back ab no came back normal rather. So yeah, I don't think I do wonder about PCOS. I still have my ovaries, and I do still get cysts,
Oh, girl.
currently. Yeah.
I've had innumerable ruptures. Something I did want to tell you, I just got, and I'm going to do another episode on this once I find out more. Went to three rheumatologists. They all were like, you don't have EDS. And I was like, this is great. Well, this last one, thankfully, was thorough enough that she was like, let's just run some blood tests, like to kind of a gambit inflammatory markers that could then point us in a direction for more tests to do. So I was like, great. And everything came back normal, other than I got abnormal results on, and I even forget, they're these crazy names of blood work, antigen things. And they came back abnormal, and I obviously did what most people do, is go online. Probably this was Christmas Eve, so I knew I wasn't going to get a message from the doctor that day. And there's something called mixed connective tissue disorder, so it's not. And that was what came up, and I thought, you know, that's so interesting. So I'm still going to learn more, and then I'll post once I learn more and get like an actual formal diagnosis of something. But it is pointing to that there's likely an autoimmune thing for me, even though, again, I went to two other rheumatologists who didn't know anything about vascular compressions. They don't. So like with you said, it's like I kind of intuitively knew it might be connective tissue, but there's so much the medical community doesn't know about connective tissue. So there might
Yeah,
not even like,
it's just like going and getting allergy testing. Like, this is a picture of this moment in time. It's the same with genetic testing. Like, this is a picture of what we have the capacity to test for, but we know that in the future we will be able to pinpoint these down a bit more.
Thank you for sharing all of that. One of the things that I do, and to give a little context, Kyle and I have been together for, it'll be our 2 year an official anniversary in 2 days, and we were living together a couple months prior to that. When we met online, I met this bastard on Bumble, okay? And I go on there, and I'm literally getting on it to delete the app because I'm like, I'm having my hysterectomy in 4 days. I'm like, I shouldn't be out in this world dating right now. I need to heal. I got 2 months and stuff. Well, I actually matched with, as I'm like about to delete the app, I matched with him. I tell him out the gate, yo, like, I'm gonna delete this app. Here's my phone number. By the way, I'm having a hysterectomy in 4 days. And I was like, and this will be the last hurrah, right? And then after that, we can go ride into the sunset honeymoon phase. And so I have the hysterectomy. He's really sweet during that. We make the relationship official. In the first 3 months, we got 3 months of a honeymoon phase. And then, just like you said, you're really good for a couple months. And then it went down. And I came home sobbing. And I was like, I don't know how to tell you this, but I have to relocate my kidney. I mean, it was almost like a joke. I mean, he even kind of chuckled because he was like, there's just no, this is wild. This doesn't sound real. And I was like, no, it is. So for me, it sounds like the reason why I share that is because for a lot of people in the Nutcracker space, the caretaker is on this path unseemingly, and then all of a sudden the symptoms start. Whereas for you, this is a genetic thing. I guess what I want to do is situate the relationship. So Clancy, did you go into this relationship with Shay being like, okay, I know that there's these structural issues that could lead to maybe something bigger in the future, or was it,
No.
did it, yeah, go
Yeah,
share a little
no, I
there.
mean, like when we got together, like she talked about back pain and stuff that she had from having two kids, but and then working in the medical field, but no, there was no like I don't remember before Finn, so we would have been together what?
He was born in 2012, so like 2.5 years.
It's like 2.5 years, like there really wasn't big flare-ups or anything. After Finn, there was more stuff, but you did just have your third kid. So yeah, so it was like, yeah, her back is not gonna be awesome. And then
and then Emmett, and it was just like, you know, fourth kid, and then her recovery time after, well, during her pregnancies, she had to work in physical positions and whatnot, you know, like moving patients and things like that. So, like, I think whatever, right after Emmett was born, it just was like, well, this is the damage that's happened to your back for having four kids and being physically active during it. So,
yeah.
I don't think any of us thought it was anything really, like, more than that, and it would just take time and normal methods of intervention and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah,
because it sounds very, and the reason why I wanted to make sure I captured that data, if you will, is because I do think there's a difference. Like with Kyle, ours is so nuanced. We were so new, and the fact that he stuck with me through the entire thing says a lot about him as a human. But like, I was curious for y'all's situation of like, oh, did you know what you were signing up for in a way of, but it sounds like you, again, Shay, you hadn't, when was your, so y'all had been together, when were you diagnosed with Nutcracker? Was it after the fourth kid?
I wasn't actually diagnosed with Nutcracker until this year, 2025. Mm. And the scan that showed me that I had the retroaortic renal vein was in 2018. But again, I didn't see that scan report until the summer of 2024.
The betrayal, the feelings of... How did you feel, Clancy, when, what was that like, you getting the diagnosis? Were you with her when she got that diagnosis?
I was with her when she didn't get the diagnosis. So we went down for the first set of tests, and they couldn't do it without the hyaluronic block. So we had to change our plans and come back down for that.
Okay.
And then I think you got the call at home, or were you at work? We were not together when you got the call.
I think I was at work. Yeah.
We were in the process of moving too. So from Northern Michigan to the Twin Cities. So like,
okay,
it's very possible I was on the road.
Yeah. Gosh.
There was a week where I think I drove back and forth like a half dozen times, 4 hours each direction with the U-Haul trucks and stuff.
God. Yeah. So he was doing me to Madison, me home from Madison, him to Minneapolis, back to home, and then me back down to Madison and back home, and then him back to Minneapolis, all within like
goodness.
A week and a half.
There was a day where I went to Minneapolis, home, and then back to Minneapolis the same day.
Oh my goodness. So then what was it like for you then when the diagnosis came through? Because you, another thing about y'all's story is you have four children. And look,
five. We have four.
Okay.
Yeah, that Shay birthed, and then our oldest, which is weird because she feels like the second oldest, but she's actually our oldest, Maddie.
Yeah,
she's our adopted daughter.
Okay,
that in the middle of all this stuff, we kind of got stuck with her.
I don't know if stuck is the word.
No, we kind of fell intellectually into her being in our orbit. So we have five.
Yeah. So like, five kids, this diagnosis comes through and you're looking down the hallway, a dark hallway with no lights on, of an auto transplant. So what then, Clancy, to not only hear that diagnosis, but then to also realize like how the landscape of y'all, all of y'all's lives are going to change. What was that like for you?
Well, like it didn't. I mean, if we go back, like, your really severe stuff started like your hysterectomy on, like, you know, like it feels to me like maybe like something, you know, you drive in a bad road and your car gets shook up and something gets shook loose. But, you know, in hindsight, you think about the hysterectomy, then the abdominoplasty, like you were in real pain and they were jumping to, oh, this, it's probably it. We need to take her, we'll just take her uterus out. You know, like, oh, you know what? You got too much stuff hanging down. We got to cut some stomach off. You know, like it was just all these things that like you were never stoked about. You know what I mean? Like you were never like on board. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure with any woman, you were not 35 and having a hysterectomy, right?
Yeah, that was emotional.
Yeah, like any woman right there. Like we were done having kids, but like the decision was being made like this is it. Like there's no more of this journey. And like that has to be tough, and that's something you sit with for yourself. Like, is I don't know what that's like. But yeah, so it was all that jumping. So like at that point, we've been through two big surgeries at that point for you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And the year before in 2024, we had some pretty big family losses. And I think by 2025, it was like, nobody's saying you're dying. Like no one has said this is terminal. It was very much like, oh, okay, we've identified it. Here's our solution to do it. And, you know, Shay was very calm about it. So she wasn't like freaking out that she wasn't going to make it during surgery and stuff like that. And it was, I don't know if we were just too busy to really like let it all settle in. Cause literally she got the diagnosis. We moved our whole family. Then she had to do camp for a week. She was home for maybe a week or two and then surgery. Like it was, I don't know. Like
it was fast.
It was fast.
Yeah. That's how it felt for us. Cause I had my initial consult in November and then they were like, oh, we actually have this like right before December. And I was like, sign me up. Out of pocket max is already met. Let's get that 175K free. So mine was also fast.
That's exactly what the situation was with us because like, she thought maybe November and then they're like, well, July is when we're going to do it. And it was like, oh, okay. July it is.
You know? And
she called and it's like, well, what am I supposed to say? Like, no. And
I think the biggest thing during that time was like, how do we navigate? Not so much like my surgery and this complex issue, but how do we navigate our kids? How do we navigate my support system? And so I think that was like the biggest challenge for us. And I think you did a great job with like, I don't know if you want to speak to like creating that document for.
Oh yeah.
Tell me so, like, about the document.
So like one of the things we figured out kind of soon was there was either someone needs to come stay here with the kids while I'm down with Shay, or someone needs to go stay with Shay while I'm here with the kids. And we were going to have her in a hotel down the street from the hospital. And people have been really cool about contributing towards like food carts and stuff. So it was like, well, I think this will be the easier sell. You know what I mean? Like, hey, do you want to go stay in a hotel room with Shay and just hang out and watch TV for however long? And people bought into it. So we created a sheet of like what days, who we needed for coverage, where, and like, what things might be in the world. I mean, we were lucky because it was summer break. So like we didn't have to worry about school and neither of our kids do summer activities. So like that was pretty easy. And then both of our older two were pretty independent at the moment. Like they both had jobs. They were out and about and whatnot. So it was really like, and then we did have a puppy. I guess I keep forgetting about Nala. So we just moved and we had a puppy. So it was a lot easier to think about with our two youngest. Our two youngest, just like having a support of a family or a parent there as they're getting used to our new areas and our new routines. Yeah. The dog getting the same. And then our two oldest that are having some successes right now, like making sure they had that support, that just made more sense for me to stay home and for someone else to stay with Shay at different
times. I love that. Yeah, no, this is wonderful. The last episode I recorded, it was a lot. I learned so much, and this is another one. They were talking about having like hand signals for like when the pain would get too bad and she couldn't speak, and that being a way to communicate. It was also like they had these almost like a document contract, like saying, you know, she was a really strong, independent woman and being like, she'll just be like, no, I don't need to go to ER. But these were the instances in which he should override her. Like, but getting consent prior. And I think this document is another way that this series is so powerful, because it sounds like Clancy, for you in that situation, because Shay's like, yo, I'm going to be in surgery. I'll obviously do what I can prior. But once the surgery happens, you don't know what's going to happen actually. So you don't know how hands-on you can be or not. So for you, Clancy, you were like, okay, I got to delegate. There's no way I can look at five kids. We also had a new puppy. He came with us, thankfully, and was so funny. And actually tore up a lot of the Airbnb, so he cost us more money, but it was just funny. To delegate and be like, hey, and to ask for help, like to tell the caretaker, for you can't do this all on your own. and how, what might that look like if it is creating that document to say who would like to, you can either donate, you can help in these ways. You could donate money for the food meal chain for us to be able to, we got an Airbnb so we could cook. We were looking at a hotel so that you can get obviously takeout. That hotel, we stayed there for the initial consult. I know which one y'all are talking about. That or people, especially it sounds like where you live, we're from Colorado, so we didn't have one of the things I wish I would have done, and I didn't know it was literally Kyle and I. My family had nothing to do with to help me out, so he was a solo caretaker. I wish I would have, looking back and even hearing you all speak now, maybe reached out to my friends and said, hey, who would like to come to Madison. I will say the summer is a lot better than the winter. It was a little dreary and humdrummy while we were there, and added to the depression. But yeah, like come up, like, you know, it's not like you have to literally be next to me the whole time, just to give Kyle some of that like reprieve. And again, I didn't know, I've never been in this situation before. So that's why I think these episodes are going to be so great, to spark ideas on how to, we want to support ourselves as patients, but we also want the caretaker to be supported. And you do realize when, not in all cases, but a lot of times when crisis hits like this and a massive surgery is needed, a lot of people do surprise you and come to the forefront and help out in ways if you wouldn't have asked otherwise. Mm-hmm. So thanks for sharing that practical strategy that I think people can benefit from.
Yeah. And in hindsight, I probably would have also added backup plans. I did end up having a post-op complication.
Okay.
I ended up having UTI symptoms. I still had the stent placed. And I mean, I was having some loose stools, but they weren't anything that I thought was significant. And so I went back to the ER. Unfortunately, that was the time that my husband and kids came down for their allotted time to come be with me. And that was a lot. Like, I felt bad for him. I felt bad for my kids. And then, you know, we left our 10 and 12 year old in actually it would have been 9 and 11 year old at the time in the hotel by themselves while we sat in the ER. But I ended up getting readmitted and I had C. diff. So they went home, and then my caretaker that came down was my mom. And by the time she got there, I was just like, well, I mean, they're running a test for C. diff, but I don't think it's going to be positive. Yeah. And it was. And she was having surgery the next week. So I sent her home and I kind of like didn't have a caretaker for several days. So the hospital actually wouldn't discharge me back to the hotel until I had somebody come relieve me. Okay. So in hindsight, I would have had another column on my sheet as like a backup plan.
Ooh, like, oh, that's a good point. Yeah. Yeah. And I remember in the initial consult, the social worker had to, I mean, Kyle was in there. I knew this question was going to be asked. They want to know what your plan A, plan B, and plan C is. What happens if Kyle gets in a car accident? I mean, that type of stuff. And my family wanted nothing to do with the process. His family was a little bit more supportive, but not really. So I kind of told him going in, I was like, we're going to have to play this. And because this is a life-saving surgery. I was like, I can't. Yeah. I was like, yeah, we have my family. They'll come up. And the whole time I'm like, no, they don't give two shits about what's going on. So I love that though, of like having the document, but just going in and saying, hey, will somebody sign up as a backup and go ahead and like, maybe for the weekend or these days, just don't block your calendar in the event that I do need you. I think that's really powerful. And it's one way to be proactive to mitigate the stress in the moment when those things happen. Mm-hmm. So you're not having to try to be creative while you're also dealing with a health issue. Yeah. No, that's one. I thank you for these practical strategies. To me can really change so much. I am curious, Clancy, so we've kind of talked about what it was like for you to hear the news. It just seems like, again, distraction is a powerful thing. Like you said, y'all are busy. I also kept myself very busy in the interim of getting diagnosed, getting invited out, doing the surgery. It's warranted. So I think y'all being busy sounds like it was really just kind of like, okay, let's get this stuff done. Let's be distracted. Then let's go get the surgery so you're not overthinking it or ruminating on all the negative possibilities. How then, Clancy, like, talk to me about a little bit of identity shift, emotional labor, caretaking responsibilities, you know, role strain, like your life just overall changing, maybe with the diagnosis, but also just with the surgery itself and that section of time, and maybe even now too.
Yeah, I think that I was there more for Haley and Maddie, our two oldest, in a more physical, or not physical, like present way, because I had to. Like, Shay usually is their go-to for when they're struggling with something, and I was the only parent here, and that's really changed my relationship with those two a little bit. Okay. Otherwise, I mean, caretaker and stuff, we've shared those duties with the kids really from day one. Like, obviously we have different specific, like, items that we are more connected with them than others, and then each other is, but we've shared that part of it. I think the biggest shift for me was really, like, I was just focused on our kids and whatnot, and then, like, keeping other people informed during the surgery, but, like, I didn't really connect with any of my family or anyone else. It was really just the kids and Shay during that time period, you know, both her family and mine. And it was really nice to just be here with the kids and, like, be in a new space, because I think it would have been a lot harder if we were still in the old space that we'd always been in. But here it was something kind of fresh. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm almost, maybe there's more to flesh out here. Like, with your two oldest, having that time with them, and there's a lot of research too on post-traumatic growth, like how hard situations such as surgery can actually lead to. Like, Kyle and I, we really struggled, but our relationship is a lot stronger because of it. So, like, maybe the relationships with your kids, enhancing the family unit's connection, is there any of that that you can speak toward on the growth that happened?
There were some cool moments between the older two and the younger two while Shay was gone, like, where they included each other, and, like, they took Finn, the then 12-year-old, now 13-year-old, on, like, a bus trip where they went over across the city and whatnot and got lunch, and that was really neat. And I don't know if that would have happened if Shay was home. So it was just little moments like that. And then, like, for Maddie, I think that it really helped her with the feeling more permanent in her world, you know, like, she had just really come into our world and just trusted us to come move to the cities with us. And now suddenly she's at risk, and this child's had abandonment at different times. And, like, somehow she stayed really positive with it and connected and trusting the system and whatnot. So that was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think even, like, when they would reach out to me, I would default, like, you know, I'm sorry you're struggling. Have you talked to Clancy about it? And I think that did kind of, I mean, I think that they've always had a good relationship, but he's right. Like, they did rely on me for more of that emotional working through their own trauma-y, crisis-y type things. And so I do see them continue, now that I'm home and well, to, like, seek him out first and not always just default to me. And so I see that their relationship has evolved.
Yeah, it's funny, like, in the last 2 weeks, both of them have told me that sometimes they prefer talking to me than you.
It's welcomed. It's very welcomed.
They said, their feedback was very simple, like, you'll just let us bitch.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Fine.
Whereas mom will be like, well, what tools do you have? And they're like, I don't want to talk
solution
about
focused. I yes. Want to about
this. And you're just like, yeah, it sucks. It's like, well, yeah, because
absolutely. And I think that speaks towards something else from, like, a caretaker point of view, because it's very much a co-created space of, like, you, Shay, also having, like, y'all figuring out what is the new dynamic. Because whoever the primary caretaker is, they're going to be taking on a lot more responsibility, especially once the surgery, like, for me, I was pretty down and out leading up to the surgery, but then the surgery happens and you're really down and out while you're healing, is when you have kids involved. And Kyle and I, we don't have kids, so we didn't have to think about this variable, but to explicitly situate direct communication with other, not just the kids, but any other caretakers, direct, indirect, to say, hey, I know our relationship, the dynamic is like this. Maybe the kids come to me more so for the emotional support. But hey, everybody, just to let you all know, I'm probably not going to be as available as I was. So this isn't me saying go talk to Clancy because I don't love you anymore. It's just say the dynamic has to change to support, make sure as many of the members are as supported. And so some of the roles are going to change. And everybody just kind of getting on board for understanding that. And for you, Clancy, it seems like you welcome that with open arms. And because of the feedback you're getting, did a good job of that. And especially, it's just harder because then you have the kids to think about too. You're trying to help their frontal lobe to wrap around and their reptilian brain wrap around what's happening. And that could be something too to help alleviate the pressure of the primary caretaker is to have those conversations. And if it's not with kids, maybe it's with the mothers-in-law and whoever, especially setting boundaries. We were a couple, we instead of saying, hey, this is bringing more people in, we actually had to set a lot of boundaries. And I think that's important and nuanced depending. But I love that y'all are bringing that up on talking to the kids, saying, hey, we still, because what I'm gathering is you were still saying we want to emotionally support you. It's just going to look different right now. The emotional support isn't going to go away. Okay.
Correct.
It just right now I can't do it. And I think that is so beautiful. And thank you for sharing that. Not because others might not be doing it, but just as a like, oh, I didn't think about the explicitness of that being needed to help mitigate stressful situations, like a kid having a meltdown, because they might think, well, I can't. There might be the assumption of Clancy, they don't want to go to you because there's a lot of, I don't want to add to the plate, you know? But if you let them know, hey, no, add to the plate, you're just going to have to do it with somebody else. I think
I
is,
think too, the way we chose to do this journey is right, like me having friends and family come take care of me and him be at home. I think it was really nice that like that helped support him, even though his roles and everything changed, it took off the pressure of having to care for me. Whereas him being at home with the kids took the pressure off of me because I knew that they would be with somebody who would continue that routine and consistency that they needed. And so, like, had I been like, no, I need you to be with me, like, that would have messed up all of our worlds, not just me and my surgery and recovery, but also our kids. And so, like, the way we chose to do that, I think helped alleviate stress
Yeah, I
for
think it
both
had a
of
real low
us.
impact. I mean, I think you're right. If we had both been gone, it would have been a bigger problem for
And the one reason that they did come to see me, and it was just Clancy and the two younger kids, like I was so overwhelmed. Like I didn't I was so excited that they were coming. And then I was instantly like, oh my God, abort this mission. Like I don't want to send you 4 hours home and also this is too much.
Absolutely, absolutely. There was a little bit of
was
that for
helpful.
us too, is that we I think we'd originally did plan for some of Kyle's family to come up. They were like a 3, 4 hours away in Bloomington. And then Kyle, it was really I kind of found out more so from him while I was inpatient. He was like, hey, I told like my mom not to come anymore. 'Cause like for him, it was just being like, this is going to add more stress actually than what. And so some of that, I think maybe even circling back to this document you created is also normalizing for these people. Hey, like we could call an audible, if you will, the day of, just because you don't know, like maybe we do have to go to the ER and you're not needed, or maybe we just decide that you coming down is a little bit more to juggle or whatever it is. And so the more explicit communication that can be had across all domains with kids, with other caretakers, is obviously going to help mitigate a lot. And then, so to, I'm glad you all are capturing this in your lived experience, because a lot of people struggle with communication and health stuff like this, like kind of puts it like, okay, you're going to have to either address the communication or y'all are going to really struggle if you can't figure out how to explicitly organize things to help you.
We also had a like a communication chain to like alleviate the burden of like having to send out notifications to everybody. It was Clancy would send out a group message to, I think it was four people in one group message.
Yeah.
And then those four people kind of spread out to like the broader people in those groups.
I love this matrix.
Yeah, it really was. Mm. And that just took the pressure off, like, right? Like, he didn't have to answer all 90 people's questions. Right. It was just like, here, four people, here's the information I have. Now, you know, leave me alone.
Yeah.
And it helps that, like, right, I do work in the medical field. So, like, right, a lot of my friends are medical background. And so they know, you know, when to, like, hey, do you need help? Oh, you're good. Great. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was really nice.
Absolutely. And I think too, as the patient, it's really important for us to communicate our preferences with the care team, because they're, and this is also intersected by a lot of cultural norms, but like, I was raised in the South and in a Southern Baptist community, and it's very much just like, this is what care is supposed to look like when somebody gets really sick. And maybe that's universal, I don't know. But I just want to provide space that there's other cultural lived experiences based on region and religion and things. But for me, it was a, like, letting Kyle know, and maybe for you too, Shay, like, letting Clancy know, like, hey, this is at, like, it was me having to say, like, I remember explicitly going, I just want you to know I don't expect you to sleep in the hospital room with me. And I could feel him be like, oh, thank God. Like, because he was just, he's a 6'4 guy, and they don't, I mean, at least the room at UW I was in didn't allow people to stay overnight anyways, let alone there was no bed in there for them to sleep anyways. So he, but it's like, one of the ways we can help caretakers as well is to just say, hey, this is what I need or what I don't need. Hey, like, this stereotypical, like, you being at my beck and call every second is actually really claustrophobic for me. So you can back up and go play your video games. You know, I remember having to say that to Kyle, like, it's okay that you go play Civ and disconnect. I don't need you there all the time.
Yeah. You brought your Switch and played. And I remember being glad at UW was like, no, like, he actually can't stay in the hospital. Like, that was nice, because then, right, I, like, could ask the nursing staff to, like, you know, and utilize them. But it was also nice to have him there. I remember getting wheeled into the room, and when I was starting to wake up, like, I remember having a very concrete plan with my provider, and then being like, well, hey, where's my PCA pump, you know? Clancy being like, oh, let me go get them and tell them that you're having pain. And they were like, well, here's, you can have some oral oxycodone. And I was like, she said nothing by mouth. Like, she said there was going to be a PCA pump. And so I refused to take it. And like, thankfully he was there at that time, because I was just like, my pain was just getting higher and higher and higher. And I remember, like, just laying there, like, punching the bedside rail.
You're shouting.
And I was like, go get someone. Don't come back in here until they have something, some pain meds.
I can't believe, I'll be honest with you, I can't believe they didn't have, I had the epidural, and so they already had the PCA attached to the epidural when I woke up. It actually led to me having complications waking up because of the numbing agent in the epidural. So there was some of that, but I've actually heard from other people that didn't do the epidural, they didn't get the PCA right out of the bat. And I'm like, what did these people think? They they cut you open like a fish, and then they think oral pain meds is going to be enough. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
So, yeah. I remember Marcy came to check on me, and I was like, you'll never guess what happened. Like, take care of this for me.
Gosh. Good. Well, I'm glad you ended up getting it. That's kind of asinine to me to think about. I am curious, you know, we talked some about kind of during the auto transplant. So now you're five and a half months after. And so on the other side of things, we talked a bit about what you gained, like relationship dynamics changing, it seems, for the better. I do also want to have space. Sometimes there's growth, but were there things that you're like, yeah, we're kind of still picking up the pieces now, because this was on the other side of things?
I think the thing that comes to mind is the back pain issue that I'm having. Like, I feel defeated. Like, is this ever going to go away? Is this even connected to the Nutcracker? And like, I mean, I was I just pulled my back out a couple weeks ago, and I was down for 3 days. And you know, I get so frustrated. I know that Clancy will be there to help take care of me and support me. And there's also a stubbornness of like, I don't want him to have to, like, yeah. I am my own person, you know, I'm capable of doing this. And like, you know, shame and like fear of like, when is it too much, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think that we communicate well, like, and take care of each other well. And I know that those are like fears I think in my head, but I don't think like, right, he's not going to just leave me because I pulled my back out again.
Yeah. But it's still there. Clancy, what are your thoughts on Shay talking about this? Like, from your perspective?
Talking about?
Like, the shame and fear that she feels when, you know, things aren't fully resolved and still needing to rely on you.
Yeah, I think it's changed a little bit that she takes the injuries a lot more personally. Like, there's this new dynamic of it, whereas like, instead of this being a thing that happened to her, it's more like, you know, what was that for, kind of thing, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. she said, like, you know, was this even Nutcracker kind of thing. So I think that's different because of how much work she put into getting the surgery and then getting through it and then to still have it. But I mean, I guess that's how chronic stuff works, right? Like, you, mm-hmm. it's all pieces, and then mm-hmm. you fix a piece at a time, and hopefully it puts back together in a better spot.
Yeah.
And he does a great job of reminding me, like, you know, we know it takes more than a year to fully recover, and that like my body is still changing, and mm-hmm. and yeah, like, it's great to just have that, you know, echoing back, like, hey, like, this is part of the process, like,
yeah,
we're gonna get through.
Another thing medical stuff brings up, and I teach diversity, equity, inclusion classes and the whole thing, and I'm pretty, you know, cultural humility, at least. Like, I don't feel like I'm ever going to be competent in all aspects of culture, but just being humble enough to, like, realize that that's a variable that's at play. But I think with all of this, it's the concept of, like, gosh, I'm like having a brain fog moment. In a little bit of a tangent here, I've fixed my Nutcracker, fixed my Mathurner, but now I'm gonna have to go get my legs. My valves are completely failing. So it's a, like, listening to your story, I'm like, I'm almost just like, oh my gosh, it sounds like Mathurner's a thing, and you might still have to get your legs done long term. Yeah, I'm having like a blank. I was connecting what you were saying to something, and then my brain fog, I'm having to wear my compression. I had a bad leg night last night because all my blood's just pulling in my legs, so I feel like the audience will be like, oh yeah, we understand brain fog. But I think the gosh, where was I going with that? Well, if it matters, we'll come back around to it. I did want to ask you all about the this process, and has it revealed something to you about your relationship? Like, maybe even from a growth perspective, things to work on, stuff like that.
Yeah, I think we've always been a really strong couple. And I think for me, even when I have moments of like doom and gloom and, oh my God, and you're right, like, let me go get those stupid compression socks and put them on, you know, in the larger picture, you know, like, we are very strong and we do support each other. And, and like, I always say, like, Clancy is my rock. Like, I wouldn't have gotten through so many of these things without his support. And I feel like looking over the last, you know, 5.5 months, that just, you know, for me, it shows that is even stronger than ever. And like, that rock is even heavier. You know, it's
absolutely
just so anchored down, and like if we can get through this, we can get through anything.
Absolutely. Yeah, Clancy, what about, like, from your perspective, your relationship changing for the better, this process pointing stuff out for you?
Yeah, I agree with everything she said. I think the biggest thing that's changed is, like, with the back pain stuff, like I need to, like I've just recently voiced this to Shay, is that, you know, like I'm interested in finding like a chronic support group, you know, for individuals to talk about like that kind of stuff, because the fact that like it does wear you down, and there's a certain amount of guilt with even voicing that you're worn down, because the fact that like it's like, oh, you have it tough? Are you having surgery? Did you have it?
Exactly.
So it's really like one of those things where it's just to find out how other people deal with that, you know, like would be, yes, would be interesting to have that space, and that would be neat. So I would say that's the biggest thing that's changed with that.
Okay. You know? Yeah, no. And you speak toward exactly why I was, you know, wanting to create these support groups, to be able to create that space for you to just go and just like, we need the emotional support. And, you know, one of the things in some of the literature on polyamory, which I am not, but a lot of my friends are, it's beautiful, because it just polyamory is very much like not one person can meet all your needs. And it's the same thing, that same kind of philosophy is also within the medical space of, I can't look to Kyle to be like, you know, the more I'm looking at him to do all, like, be my emotionally meet all my needs, physically me, go to all the doctor's appointments, all that stuff, like, he's going to get run down so much more. So that's why the social support is so great. I was able to actually, I found a really good friend during the process that she took on a lot of the emotional load, because we were both going through the exact same thing, like a couple months apart from each other. And that helped Kyle. And so that's what another reason why I'm passionate about the social support groups, so that you, like you said, Clancy, can go and be able to just talk to somebody else, maybe, and create a lifelong friend through trauma bonding, if you will, to just be able to go and let loose. Because health stuff has a way of sucking the room out of the air. Because Kyle has said the same thing. He's like, I'm going through my own shit, and but I always feel bad if I like want to, you're like, how was your day? He would always down, like, yeah, it was good. Because he also knew that I saw how bad I was struggling. He was literally, you know, I looked like a cancer patient leading into the surgery, just how badly I was. But I would keep saying things like, well, no, I really do want to know. But it is hard. Like, you're trying not, you're walking on eggshells as the caretaker. Because even though I might say that, it's like, yeah, but can you? Because I'm looking at you right now, and it really doesn't seem like you can. So I'm definitely glad you said that. And I hope this is something that from, I'm hoping these episodes themselves feel like a nice little balm to the soul for caretakers. But like that social support group will be helpful too. Another question I did have for you, Clancy, is what were things that Shay did to support you as the caretaker, or maybe even extending beyond that, of what did she do that supported you, and maybe things that she could have done to support you?
I think a big help was she took care of all the insurance related stuff. Like, I think if I had brains on that, it would have been too much. Just the advocate of that part. And we were super lucky, you know, like, we have incredible health insurance compared to so many people, that we did not have the fears that so many people have with this. And it still was hoop after hoop after hoop, whatnot. You know, she kept me informed about what it was, explained the recovery times, you know, as parts of the process went along. She didn't try to overbog me with a lot of the medical jargon, knowing that I don't have an affinity for it. Yeah. And I don't want to say I don't care, but like, at the same time, like, what's happening now is like, I don't like all the letters and whatnot and things like that. So
the POA.
POA.
Power of attorney.
Oh, the power of attorney stuff. Yeah. Like, we had agreed, you know, Shay made the decision to not make me her medical power of attorney, to let our friend Nate, who is a doctor, be in charge of that. Mm-hmm. They had a conversation about what she wanted and what she wanted from him, and that would have made a lot more difficult to have it with me, just because I don't necessarily, she'd have to explain so much more, get me caught up, and then be like, okay, so now I need you to do this. And it's like, oh, okay. So pull the plug.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's like, for sure.
So it was very nice to not have that problem.
Yeah.
One less thing, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So that was absolutely a big support.
Yeah, one of the things I'm hearing you all talking is, I mean, and I'm a professor, I'm always like thinking about worksheets to do with students and to help get a concept by. And something that's coming almost like I feel like I'm downloading now is something I kept asking Kyle. Well, first of all, I was like, you didn't swipe on Bumble for this. So if you want to exit stage left, you're more than welcome to, and I'll figure it out. Like, you didn't, I also wouldn't have matched with you if I knew this was coming down the pipeline. However, I do remember saying every year I do a values activity at the very beginning of the year. And this year I actually did it while I was inpatient on allotted, so I was very fucked up. And my word for this year was autonomy. And it came about kind of because of last year, because I was raised very traditional. Women are supposed to be submissive to men, and men are supposed to provide everything for women, that type stuff. So I really have been trying to deconstruct that because I don't believe in that. And so I kept telling Kyle, like, hey, I really want you to have autonomy during this. And so something I'm almost thinking is like, if you have that Excel spreadsheet, like the document you were talking about, and it's almost like think like Clancy, be as honest as possible on the things that you kind of don't want to have your hands on. And like, you know, you might have to have your hands on them, but I would rather you communicate from the jump what you really don't want to be a part of. And then we can delegate accordingly from there. Like you said, insurance isn't something like if I can stay as far away from these things, I will do it if I need to, right? Like, I'm not saying I'm not going to do it at all, but really allowing the caretaker's voice to come forward and saying, I have no problems doing X, Y, and Z, but these are the things like I don't want to sleep overnight. Kyle's somebody, he's like not a hangry person, but if he doesn't sleep well, he turns into a monster. So that was another reason why I was like, neither of us are going to benefit if you're sleeping in a hotel room or staying longer than you want without resting. For the caretaker to say, yeah, I hate to say this, I don't want this to seem like I'm not supportive, but I really don't want to do this. And talking about that before Clancy, you're just doing things because you think you're supposed to do them, and then it turns into you being resentful and having a, it impeding upon your caretaking ability. So I think that's something us as client or not clients, patients could do is just really ask that empowering question of like, hey, as the primary caretaker, are there things that you're just really not wanting to do? And if so, like for you, Shay, I did the same thing. It was all me on insurance. It's just easier too, because it was my name on it, whatever. And I just told him, I was like, if you don't mind like sharing, I had a GoFundMe, those type things, then he felt a little less, okay, cool, I'm being heard, right? Like, because caretakers have the, oftentimes what happens is they are, one of the biggest thing Kyle says right now is, we still are processing a year later. I just had my 10 days ago was my year anniversary, which was exciting. And to this day, people still, nobody has asked Kyle, how are you doing through all of this? And maybe that's just, I don't, I, it's probably a lot of intersecting variables, but they were always just like, how Simone, how Simone, how Simone. And not really realizing that the caretaker, like the helplessness that you have, I at least felt like, okay, I can control this to some degree. And the caretaker to me, I would hate to be a caretaker in that, like if the tables were flipped, to be quite honest with you. So the more I think this document y'all are talking about, the conversations you've had about power of attorney is really important. Kyle and I actually never had those convos. So I'm glad that we captured that on this of like normalizing too that it doesn't have to be your spouse. It doesn't have to be your partner that's the power of attorney. I think that's really powerful. Could you tell me a little bit more on why that decision was made to not go with your spouse being the power of attorney?
So when I was looking at that document, one, I knew my husband wasn't medical and I would have to explain all that. But two, if something life altering was happening to me, I wanted him to just be with me, or I wanted him to be with our kids and, get the kids to me. I didn't want him to have to worry about making all of those decisions as well, because it would take away, right? If God forbid something terror, like I was going to die, I would have hated for him to have been like in chaos, crisis, calling people, trying to get at the information, instead of just being there holding my hand and loving me. And so I was like, man, I have so many people who can fill this role for me medically. I can have a conversation with them, tell them exactly what I want and when to, you know, make those final decisions with my husband. And then in the meantime, he can just physically and emotionally be with me.
That's amazing. Clancy, how was that for what, like that outcome for you? How did you feel coming to that conclusion?
No, it was super reasonable. You figure I was going to consult probably with Nate anyways.
Yeah.
The only other medical professional I could consult with, while Shay likes them as an individual, his decision she doesn't always agree with. My previous doctor, who I'm friends with, she doesn't always love his choices. Like, so it was one of those things where this worked a lot better because the fact that I would need to consult with someone medically inclined anyways, it would be Nate. So it made more sense to just have Nate make those decisions and explain them to me, you know?
Yeah. And I think this is, I'm so glad we're capturing this again of like, hey, think about how all these documents and contracts and power of attorneys and things like that can also be a way to have a conversation on how can you support not only yourself and what you want, Shay, right? Like I want my husband there, but then also what would be best for Clancy so that we're not causing stress. There's so much proactive that goes in, especially when you're like not feeling great, you know, but that I looked at it as like, this is good distraction for me to have to think about all of these things. So that's
what
wonderful.
If I had been the medical power of attorney and they had like presented me a situation I didn't know about and I had to Google it, like, is that the world we want to live in? Where
I can I get on ChatGPT and ask, should I put a plug on my life?
I'm beholden to which algorithm I'm typing it into and what way it leans.
Like you literally say, should I pull the plug on my wife? I'm so sorry, Clancy. It sounds like you're going, you know how it's so affirming.
Like,
it gives you a paragraph,
a YouTube video, like explaining the process with like really bad animations. Like,
that's what I was saying. Yeah. And you're like, this is what this has come to, you know? And you're like,
what did she write down?
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh. No,
if
a lot
get
of this is
link, it could be like, have we checked to see if she's a lizard person? I don't know. Like that's what the video says. Probably that.
And I've always wanted to be an organ donor too. And so like I didn't want him to be like, well, wait a minute, what? Like she wants people to have her organs and like
Well, I would have had no problem with that.
Well, I know, but like in the moment, you know, like
it's like that,
absolutely. Yes.
Oh, it's super interesting.
Well, and I think something we can do to care about the caretakers in our lives. And again, doing these episodes, I'm going to go home tonight and be like, Kyle, I need to apologize. I could have been better, you know, but it was, again, we were perpetually single for a lot of our lives and we found ourselves navigating this crisis together. And it was like, okay, I guess we're doing this. But with that being said, like, I feel like I could... another thing too, and I want to do a series on this. I'm going to actually read a book about just death and dying and how different cultures look at it. Because it's having the conversations, like one of the things Kyle and I did talk about, and it was a little jokingly, is I was like, well, if anything happens, I just want to be cremated. And this is what I want you to do with my body after, like, kind of like that, but right. Like power of attorney, but like, let's actually have the really hard conversations that a lot of people, death is uncomfortable. And we don't live in a society that teaches us to know how to navigate death. We just kind of ignore it until the time comes. And it's kind of a scary concept. So what it sounds like is that you all did like through couched within that power of attorney. And that is one way that we can love the caretakers to say, hey, there's no way we can anticipate if the worst case scenario happens, what kind of shock or anger is going to come up for you in that moment? Because it could have been that I got in that situation out of negligence from the hospital. So now you're really angry and you're not thinking from a reasonable, grounded mind anymore because you're about to lose your spouse, potentially the mother of your kids, the whole nine yards. So let's go ahead. And I also think there's a lot of power. It sounds like y'all were doing it in the document, but literally typing things out in black and white, because you're almost going to need that document to just be like, okay, for your frontal lobe to engage. And this is what she agreed to. This is what we both agreed to when things weren't chaotic. And it just, it's a way to be kind to yourself. It's a way to be kind to the caretaker. Like if you're under anesthesia and you, Clancy, have to make a game time decision and you can't consult Shay, because of the, you know, or you call Nate and he doesn't answer right away, but you already had that document that's there of like, hey, this is kind of our holy grail, if you will, leading into this specific scenario. So I love that this conversation has led to that, like different ways to care for a caretaker. I am curious, looking back on y'all's journey, if you could go back, I don't even know what day one would be, but if you could just go back and like talk to yourselves, give yourself some advice, like what would that be?
Yeah, man.
Don't take Emmett and Finn.
Don't bring the cute little ones. No. I think I would just need to keep, I would want to go back and encourage myself that like I know my body. Keep listening to yourself. Keep trusting your instinct. And I think I would go back and also be like, ask Clancy what he needs, you know, as far as like downtime and decompressing while I'm gone. Because I do feel like I did have friends that were, you know, offered to come here and be with the kids, and I didn't know how comfortable or uncomfortable he would be with that. And so I kind of just was just like, eh, well, this is our life, you know, like he's used to it. But in hindsight, I think that could have been helpful. And so I think I would have done a better job of asking what more downtime I could have helped navigate for him. And I think too, those conversations, like someone, like when you said Kyle would come home and be like, how you'd ask him how his day was, and you could tell he was kind of just like, oh, well, it's fine. You know, like some of those moments were like really important to me, because when I could be supportive, like that would give me a lot of energy, and like I felt like I could be, the caretaker, so to speak, in those situations. And so like I think in hindsight, I would have told myself to appreciate these moments a bit more, because even though you're not doing much and you are, you know, unwell right now, like you are contributing to, instead of,
Absolutely.
yeah.
I would call my friends, and every time they see my friend, they'd be like, "Oh my gosh, how are you doing?" And I'd be like, "Nope. Don't ask me that question. What's going on in your world?" They're like, "Well," and I was like, no. I don't care how many. Like, tell me about who do I need to flip a table on? Tell me about that person you're annoyed with right now." You know, like it was really supportive of me just to like act like it was normal. Act like we were just talking about like new things happening in their lives, things I could be stoked about. And so I do agree with that. I just wrote down, I think to extend that document I was just talking about, which is like maybe as a couple, you get the diagnosis, you sit down, what needs to be done, right? Like we need to organize the kids, meals, insurance, and then asking the caretaker, what do you not want to do? What on this list are you just like, hell no? And then saying, okay, I want to honor that because you're about to really put in a lot of work. And then another thing I added is, what do you need? Right? Like, what are, like you were saying, more so of like, what do you need? Could we create something where people could come over, take the kids, and you could just go and play your video games and disconnect? Kind of almost creating that document, that sheet of that can support couples in any, whatever that is, parent, child, husband, wife, partners, to have those conversations on, hey, like this is about to get in the nitty-gritty, so let's really make sure that both people's voices are heard. And how, like, on the flip side of that, what do you not want to do, Shay? Like, and then what do you need? And then you can come to an agreement of, okay, got it. So I'm glad you said that, because it kind of sparked that, like, oh, here's another column to add to this Excel spreadsheet. Clancy, what about you? If you could go back, like if you can go back and say something yourself, maybe something you wish you would have done, what would that be?
Don't know. One thing that I'm thinking as we're sitting here that I'm happy I did was I had kind of like centered myself on the idea that I didn't have to feel guilty that I was home and in our new place while Shay was stuck in that hotel room. Like instead I trusted the situation, I trusted the people that were there, and I just enjoyed being here with the kids and the dog, and our new place in the new summer, and you know, and I just started a new job, and being able to do all that stuff and just keep that normal really felt good. And I didn't feel any shame over it, like even now, like just because she was, you know, there, like the whole point was to normalize things here, so we did the normal stuff here, you
know? Yeah. And it sounds like to some degree the reason why that was, you were able to create a safe space for yourself to, guilt is a massive thing that comes up in my journey, all the other journeys I've talked to, the lived experiences, like as a qualitative researcher, guilt would be probably the numero uno theme emotionally. And I'm almost gathering, and this is without having the quantitative data to then go run the test to see what the correlation would look like, is that because it seems like y'all did a really good job of communicating well up front, that it did mitigate that for you, Clancy, to where you didn't feel guilty, because we have had these discussions where there was an agreement of this, versus a lot of time I feel like, or at least the guilt I have been feeling has been tethered to us. It really has been tethered to, we never really had the conversation about. So I feel, and then now that we're actually having conversations about it, the guilt is. So I love that you felt like, yeah, I felt good being here. I think this was something great that I did, and that we created this space where I could stick back and create that normal life. And I didn't feel guilty for it because we had already talked about, that's what we're going to do. I think extending upon like what you would say to yourself, and Clancy, I'll ask this of you first, is like, what advice would you give to another caretaker that's just beginning this process or also currently going through it?
And definitely the medical power of attorney was a big help. I guess like, like I said, I'm now thinking a lot about what's it like to find a support structure for spouse of and it's not just spouse, like also parent, because we have two children that identify as chronically ill. So it's three, like, you know, in the house, like getting more outside help would have been helpful. I think we could have maybe done something better with our oldest son, who doesn't live in the house, making sure he was really in tune. I don't know if we connected him enough as with what was going on with the process. And he had just had a baby, so I'm sure we didn't do as much as we could have because we didn't want to, you know, overload him. So I guess, like, we did a really good job with who was in the house and helping them understand what was going on. I don't know if we did as great with family members outside of the house, because remember I sent that picture at your first test to the, who I thought I was informing everyone, like, hey, she's going back for her test. And I don't know how many of them wrote back, what's happening? Where is she going? And it's like, oh, maybe it would not explain the situation as well as we thought we did.
Yeah, absolutely. and that's, I mean, even just hearing you all share your story and thinking about my own and other people's, it's a complete, like, whenever you get a diagnosis like this and you're looking down the dark hallway of a massive surgery like this, you're being like, hey, we're going to have to employ a completely different family system. And that takes a lot of mental load to recreate that, the documents you have to create to try to get support, not really having like a, well, what system should we, like you were, Shay, looking back saying, yo, one of the other columns we should have added was a backup plan, you know? And so it's like there's just some things in hindsight you don't know about until you realize it wasn't there, which is why I think it's powerful capturing these stories. So hopefully we can help people mitigate. So I think the power of attorney is something I had never thought about. I think for you, Clancy, that was, I'm glad you all brought that up. And for you, it was something of like kind of reminding caretakers of really, you can do this in a way that could be gentle with you, especially if it's a spouse and what your needs are. But communication's a hard one because, you know, sometimes it's like, well, maybe if I had my GoFundMe, so it was a space not only for me to update family members, but anybody that donated. So then all I had to do is write like a blog post, if you will. And it's just like, hey, here's the update, 5 days out. But that's hard when you're juggling so many things. And I just want to validate that, like, no matter what gaps that you're like, oh, I wish we would have thought about that, it's like they're going to be there no matter what. So it's the mental flexibility of when you realize, like, oh, we could have done better here, we could have done better there, of you even sharing your story is adding value of helping other people know. And I think that's really powerful too. What do you feel like, Clancy, you wish people understood about the emotional labor it takes for carrying somebody with Nutcracker going through something like this?
I think just understanding that it's okay to not feel guilty that you're not sick, you know, like it's a lot, and I don't always vocalize when I'm overloaded well, and that's because people don't want to, what am I supposed to complain about? I'm not having surgery, you know, like I'm doing fine. And I think that that's a part that caretakers probably miss.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's another, I mean, just, I want you all to complain, you know what I'm saying? Like in a healthy, like venting, like, you know, I think about my girlfriends, I'll just call and kind of just bitch about stuff. Like you're talking about with your kids, giving you the feedback and being like, it's just nice. We can just kind of bitch about stuff. And why I want to normalize this for the caretaker, cause I've heard that from so many, like, what do I have to complain about? But it's like, no, I want you, that's actually healthy for you to have that space. And maybe it's not complaining with the patient, your spouse or whoever it is, but with the caretaker support group, to just be like, oh my gosh, I just need to get this off my plate. And just, does anybody else have something similar to be able to work through that? So I'm glad you've said that, you've normalized it. On the backside, or on the other side of that coin for you, Shay, what is some advice that you would give other people navigating this journey that are navigating it with a partner?
I think the creating that document was beneficial for so many reasons, but I think some people process things better visually versus auditorily, and like, or like, oh, I, it gives an opportunity for everyone involved to come back to it, to look at what the need is versus needing to make a decision in the moment and feeling pressured. And so just shutting down and being like, well, no, I can't do that. There's too much going on. And so I think that, as far as like communication up front goes, it's a really non-committal way for people to take the time to look at what they can offer. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, you know, these things can be done in far enough in advance that decisions don't need to be made in a week, you know, like,
yes.
I mean, it's so beneficial to have all of your ducks in a row, you know, for as long as you can, because you can replay what the process is going to look like. You can check in with people and make sure that they understand what their role is, or if they have questions, and like, right, the document evolved over time. Like I added like parking, you know, I didn't think I was going to have to be like, okay, well, when you arrive to the hotel, there's, you know, somebody will come and give you the thing to put in your windshield, you know, to make sure that you can park there. But there was just a variety of different things that evolved over time. I mean, even when I was in the hotel, I realized that, oh, well, when my caregiver switches, I actually have to notify the front desk a day in advance for them to clean the room. And so, you know, as that changed, it was like, okay, let me know when you're planning on arriving so I can have housekeeping, you know, clean everything up. And so it was a nice place for everybody to be able to view the document. And like, right, I didn't have to go back and reference the document myself, because I could just share the Google document with everybody that needed it, and they could make those independent decisions. They could read them on their own. And that helped them have more autonomy over what they could help with. And it took the pressure off of me. And so I really think it was a valuable tool. And it's kind of like a thing now that I do with anyone who has, you know, something going on that they need support. Well, Shay knows how to make the document. So yes. Like, let's reach out to her, and then people can sign up. And so it has been valuable. And, you know, I have used that in like my friend support type of groups when, you know, another friend has needed it. So I do see others benefiting. And so I do think that's the one thing I think is super beneficial, because like, right, I mean, you can even have a separate spot on there to put everybody can put their own phone number in, So like if somebody needs to call somebody else, we don't have to bug Shay or Clancy, you know, for this information. We can all just reference the document.
And that's what I was going to say. It's one way us as patients can care for the caretaker, because you're like, hey, I'm going to get this Google Doc. So then you can just submit it instead of them reaching out to Clancy and be like, so, hey, what am I supposed to do? Where am I supposed to go? And it is, I mean, you also seem very organized, and I feel like you have to be to some extent when you have, you know, five kids and there's a lot of, you're moving, and there's a new job, and the stress, I mean, and just moving in a new job in and of itself is there's distress and eustress. Eustress is the good stress. It's getting the puppy. It's getting the new job that pays more. It's moving into a new, nicer house, but it's still stressful. And then, oh, hey, by the way, we're going to add an auto transplant onto this that's not even happening where we live and where it's going to be happening far away. And in my space, I'm like, they're to navigate it well, organization, like organizing things, over communicating was also so that I was like, listen, I might say the same thing a million times. Some of it is brain fog because I forgot I said it, but just like, let me do it. And, or something I also would think in that scenario is like giving other people, if it's a Google Doc, for example, editing access. So let's say you wrote on there like, hey, you need to go to the front desk, but then somebody's like, oh, well, I did that and they told me it was a different process. They can just go in and change it instead of you having to do that. Hey, this is what I, or putting a comment. Hey, like when I went, they didn't do this for me. Just so you know, they could give you a little ask it this way. I think that could also be very beneficial. But I love, thank you all for sharing your story. Do y'all have anything else that we haven't discussed that, again, I shared the questions with you prior. So did y'all have other conversations and things you haven't noted you'd like to talk about?
I don't think so, as far as like our journey per se. I guess I just want to like reiterate to others going through this journey, like listen to your body. Like, you know your body better than anybody else in the whole wide world.
Yeah, exactly. And the amount of doctors that look at us and are like, oh, it's, and I'm like, no. I was very aggressive in my care. I was very much like, okay, you're not going to do it. I'm going to the next person. And I'm also privileged because I have insurance that allows me to do that, you know? So I'm not without understanding that the mobility I have in the medical space is a privilege. So I'm glad you're 5.5 months out. I will say the 6 month mark is like things settle. And then now that I'm at a year, you know, I did have to have one other surgery, like my hernia repair, because I just, my entire abdomen was just hernias essentially. And so that was a little like, and now I'm gonna have to go get my legs. My valves are, I just had a leg ultrasound and they are, they're not even refluxing. They're like two of them are pretty severely failed. They found some vascular abnormalities in my femoral vein, which is a part of the deep system. And so it's kind of, it's still, you know, we're not off the road, but the thing, I feel like the auto transplant is like kind of that big. And then anything after that, that you'll face is, I'll say the hernia repair was 20 times worse pain than the auto transplant. Some of it was because they downplayed the pain of that and didn't give me proper pain management like UW Health did. So I do hope, I wish you all the best as y'all navigate the rest of the journey, whether May Thurner is involved in a stint there. But what I will say is of the 7 surgeries I've had in 2 years, the May Thurner stint was the literal easiest. I was walking like two miles 2 days later. And then for the leg ablations, if you have to have that done, because with one of the things I am learning with these vascular compressions, that pressure over time, it's irreversible damage to organs. And so for this past ultrasound, they were like, yeah, it could have been that just years and years of reflux in your legs damaged those valves, you know. So, but I've also heard those are really easy procedures. No anesthesia is involved. But yeah, it's just the vascular compression space is hard because it's not a one size fits all. It's not it's usually not a one procedure, and the caretaker's on that journey with us in a space where the medical community doesn't even know. We know more than they do about what we're going through, and sometimes the caretaker too.
And I don't know if you found this to be true or it's just coincidental, but I feel more like, I'm trusted more with my medical providers that like, oh, like she has this rare thing who are we to argue that, yes. like, you know, like with the thoracic outlet syndrome, I literally had a provider say, well, I've never seen this before. It's really rare, but you've also yes. had posterior nutcracker syndrome. So I would be happy to give you a referral.
Exactly. Same and thing for me. Yeah.
And so I think just like letting people know that, like, right, you get to one side and hopefully the rest of it kind of is just, you know, okay, we're gonna do this next. Okay, we're gonna do this next. It's that sense of like, absolutely. Okay, like she does know what's going on, or you know.
Yes. It's yeah. same. And it's exhausting to get there because yeah. it takes so much. And then once I got the diagnosis, that I had a great medical team already, but once I got the diagnosis, they were just like, oh, okay. Cause it was the same thing. They were like, we've never heard of this. Mm-hmm. And that's also helped Kyle too. Cause when we go into the ERs and I just say I had a kidney auto transplant now, they're like, kind of roll out the red carpet. He doesn't have to advocate as much for me, yeah. which is also makes me a little annoyed. I'm like, where was this prior to the auto transplant?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, that actually yeah. just happened to us too. I like drove myself there and I was just like, hey, I just like want to check on my kidney. I'm having yeah. these weird symptoms. And I just felt like I just left him at home and I went by myself and I, you know, he came and picked me up afterwards and it was yeah. just, yeah, they did all the tests. I'm like, great, thanks, bye.
Yes, I know. I was like, interesting. Yeah. Anything, Clancy, on your perspective that you want to add that we haven't talked about?
I don't think so. I think we've hit everything that we talked about, going over the yeah. question. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you all for sharing your story. I think it's really powerful to speak on the nuances that everybody's lived. Relationship is going to look different. It's going to act different. And my hope is, and I'm very confident that you all sharing is going to be very powerful to help people realize like, oh, that's something else I didn't think about. And it's just our way of being gentle with others and saying, hey, this worked for us. And I learned a bunch. I took a bunch of notes, mostly because my brain fog of like reminding myself what I was thinking about. So yeah, thank you all for taking the time. Yeah. And yeah, so wonderful.
Awesome. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.